Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Now that the richest man alive has bought Twitter, how much tolerance should society have for the whims of billionaire CEOs? Let's get to the bottom line. Da Vinci, Raphael, Michelangelo, Ibn Battuta. Throughout history, artists and innovators have always been brilliant, but really complicated. Always in trouble with authority, always known to be social misfits, but still crafting ingenious art and inventions that we'd never see if they just calmed down and decided to go with the flow. Before he bought Twitter, the world's richest man, Elon Musk, was known for reinvigorating the electric car and the space industry, including satellite internet. His latest target was a platform that's only 15 years old, but has become a major source of information and entertainment for hundreds of millions of people around the world, from India to Turkey. So far, there's been a lot of disruption, and people are seeing another side of his genius. His critics call him an autocratic chief executive, while his fans call him a visionary who's out to make the world a better place. So which one is it? And how much of a pass should society give its richest individuals who answer pretty much only to themselves? Today, we're talking with Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, the founder of the Chief Executive Leadership Institute at Yale University, where he teaches about the practice of management, and Vivek Wadhwa, a software entrepreneur based in Silicon Valley, where he writes about the technologies transforming our world. One of his latest books is Your Happiness Was Hacked, Why Tech is Winning the Battle to Control Your Brain and How to Fight Back. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Let me start with you, Vivek, on this broad question of CEO behavior. I worry about the pressures to homogenize genius. And I'm wondering how you see this moment, because let me just be honest, you're one of the most disruptive writers and thinkers and doers I know. Some people will say Vivek Wadhwa is kind of out of control sometimes. So what are the right lines?
Steve, what happens is that, especially if you're in Silicon Valley, and especially today with all of this social media and all of this noise, this constant reinforcement, we end up in isolation bubbles. We end up believing our own press. So what happens is people like Elon Musk, success goes to their head. Elon is an amazing innovator. He's done wonders for the world. But we're watching Elon Musk self-destruct because he's high on his own press. He believes he's a god. And that's what happens to great innovators. They get the god complex, and then they self-destruct. This is what happens to tyrants. We're seeing this globally, where you have the leaders of some of the largest, most powerful countries in the world who have achieved too much success, and they become tyrants. They're becoming destructive. They're destroying their own countries. We're seeing this in Russia and China in particular. So this is what happens to leaders who are now believing their own press and get this god complex.
Jeffrey, what does your study of CEOs tell you about what Vivek just shared? Because we're all, pretty plugged in folks. I know a lot of CEOs. Some CEOs are good managers. They come in and they manage well. Some are visionaries. They don't all come in the same size and box and style. And I'm interested in the God complex in CEOs and your thoughts on what your experience tells you.
Well, yeah, I think that the Vivek absolutely nailed it. Of course, your setup question was very good, and it led me to reach around and almost wrench my neck out of shape to pull off the shelf this book, which is actually not a fake Zoom backdrop, but was a real backdrop. This book, The Hero's Farewell, which is not as current as the important book that Vivek just featured of his own. But in this one, we took a look at work that I did by looking at this CEO complex, the Hero's Farewell, where they may be a hero in their nation, might be a hero in their company, but certainly in their own minds, they're heroic. And that's what gets to be dangerous. As they get deified by people around them, they start to believe there is on earth one person truly indispensable, and they know who that is. So it's a kind of a heroic identity issue. Nobody ever called Alexander III of Macedonia Alexander the Great until he called himself that and created this whole false lineage to Odysseus and Achilles. And they start to believe that that myth, something completely separate, is also they believe that there's a heroic immortality, that their job is what keeps them youthful. They don't want to ever let it go. So that becomes problematic. It's especially a problem with founders, as we would take a look at some of the founders at Snap or Twitter or Uber and others, where they missed growing with different business life stages. They missed self-criticism. they started to develop a rigid sense of righteousness and a lack of alignment with their mission. And these are actually failings of the CEO, but also failings of the board to not provide some of that.
Well, I think one of the interesting challenges here, and again, folks, I don't know the answer, but I am a regular reader of Vivek Wadhwa's newsletter. I don't know if it's publicly available, but I'm on the lucky person on the list. But I guess there are so many times where I have seen stories that you've written, Vivek, about someone who's come in and ripped up the way something was done, ripped up the way cancer research is done, looked at resources very, very differently. And when I think of Elon Musk and I think about Tesla, or I think about the satellites that have now gone up, or, missions to Mars and taking NASA, which was essentially practically defunct, to be honest. And so you look at Elon Musk as a certified genius in certain areas that ripped up the way of doing things. And I guess, do we risk losing the net global public positives as we debate someone's behavior over a communications platform?
See, that's what happened to Elon, is that he did so much. I used to call him the world's greatest innovator, the greatest innovator of our times. He did wonders in bringing us, clean electric vehicles, and then changing space travel, and then many other great things he could have done, except he started believing that he was God, that he could do anything he wanted to and succeed at it. And then he made the mistake of spending too much time on Twitter. Because I had told him about 4 years ago when he was tweeting about the pedophiles in Thailand, I said, Elon, please stop. Twitter is going to destroy you. And what did Elon do? He got angry at me and he cut me off, basically. He wouldn't respond to me after that. He was on my mailing list, just like you're on, and he is unsubscribed from it. He was so angry that someone would criticize him. The problem is that the people around him are not criticizing him, and therefore he believed that the skills he had in building electric vehicles would now take him into social media, and he could go into a social media company, fire all the software engineers, and rebuild the company himself. So we're seeing him self-destruct. He may destroy the platform that we spent so much time on because of his arrogance. He's got the God complex. He thinks that he can do no wrong, and he's the only one who can save the world. This is sad because I wish he would have done more of what he's doing, that he would solve other big problems in the world, solve some of the problems of humanity. But instead, he's now going down this rat hole and is rapidly self-destructing.
Jeffrey, some of the other big high-profile names that I'm sure you've thought about in your institute at Yale, I'm thinking right now Richard Branson, right? Everybody loves I don't know if everybody does, but I sort of think Richard Branson's a kind of warmer, cuddlier version of some of what we're talking about. Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos that comes to mind, though. Adam Neumann of WeWork, where to some degree I'm interested in the ecosystem of even fake genius coming on and the culpability of media and press and civil society. Are we creating these people because of our desire to create gods in the tech space?
There's a great book called The Frenzy of Renown that just takes a look at our quest for celebrity. And we shouldn't confuse with celebrity with genius. We have seen Virgin Records and Virgin Air and Virgin Coke and Virgin everything else come and go along the way. Not sustained business, not a revolution in the way things are being done, but a lot of Me Too heavily hyped new entrants in businesses. So I wouldn't consider Richard Branson in the same league. When we take a look at Adam Neumann at WeWork, it's basically a guy who's taking leased space and subleasing it, chopping it up with distressed wood floors and Nespresso machines and foosball games and some beanbag furniture and trying to have it recast as a technological revolution, which it wasn't. It was just a lot of hype. And that's what happens. And of course, Elizabeth Holmes with Theranos. Vivek and I have written about this in several places, just about how people got drawn in by her charm and showmanship. So the pathologies there are with some fakers out there, some pretenders. But if you take a look at high-profile, large-egoed people, thinking of Bill Gates of Microsoft or Jeff Bezos of Amazon or Michael Dell, who's a pretty quiet guy but has a strong ego of Dell Technologies, they managed to overcome these pathologies. They're every bit as much a genius as the authentic ones we talked about early in this conversation. but they figured out ways that they could build a board that would police their own worst instincts. So they didn't wind up becoming religions onto themselves. There was this FOMO frenzy, this fear of missing out, that led boards and media people and financial analysts to ask the obvious questions about Sam Bankman-Fried and who is your accounting firm and how could you not have a CFO and where is there any kind of board of directors at all? There were none. And you take a look at the sophisticated investors that were there that didn't ask the most basic questions. There are investors that you would have thought would have asked questions about FTX that are some of our most prominent financiers. And similarly, the marquee name phenomena, which is like this FOMO phenomena, that people will hide behind the names of Henry Kissinger and George Shultz and former senator and a physician, Bill Frist, who was on the board of Theranos. The scientists actually quit that board, but people didn't ask questions as they saw these celebrity names, that fear of missing out and the celebrity skirts and then the accountability escape that they find a way of not answering for bad news. They just keep changing the subject. And this is something Elon Musk is pretty good at. His leaf blowers and flamethrowers, and where's this fleet of 1 million taxis that were promised to be delivered 3 years ago, autonomous taxis? You know, where are they? We just see, you know, as a CEO or in the leadership of six different companies. If you take a look at him working an 80-hour a week, which is hard to imagine because he clowns around so much for a 12-hour day, that's leaving him about less than 90 minutes per company. That's not a lot of time to be running a major enterprise on with fluid technologies and competitive markets.
Is being kind of sociopathically combative a useful character trait on the front end of innovation?
Steve, there are different skills you need for different types of, at different stages of building a world-changing company. To start with, if you're a true innovator, you have a vision that no one else has. You believe that the impossible can be done. And you're able to convince a few people to believe in you. No one else does. Everyone tells you that this is not possible. It can't be done. This business model will never work. This technology will never work. And you have a vision, a belief in your heart that you can do it. And therefore, you do everything you can to do it. You bet your life savings. You convince your friends to invest in you. You persuade a bunch of other people to work day and night with you. They're going to follow you until the end of the world to try to make this idea work. And you defy the odds and you succeed. And you do that by being autocratic, by defying the whole world and not listening to anyone. That's what it takes to build an innovative startup. Now, here's what happens. Once you've succeeded, now it becomes a management issue. This is where you have to read the books that Jeff Sonnenfeld has written and understand, you know, what he teaches business executives, that the skills required to run a $100 million company are different than those required to run a $1 billion company, which are different than those required to run a $10 billion company, because you now have to build consensus. You can no longer be arrogant. You can no longer say that mine is the only way and I'm right, everyone else is wrong. You have to listen. You now have to have a board that guides you. You have to have marketing people that do research and systematically find out what will and what won't work. You have to now speak to your customers. You have to listen to them. When they criticize you, you have to understand why they're criticizing you. What is it that they like? What is it that they don't like? So the skills required to now build a large company are different than those to build a world-changing technology. The problem is that Elon succeeded at building the world-changing technologies, and then he suddenly believed that he was the only one who could take it to the next step, who could replicate this in large companies. He couldn't. He can't. And this is why he's going to fail. He may bring all of his companies down with him. Jeff has written a lot about this. At the Yale CEO Institute, I call it the Davos of America, because it's an incredible experience. You go to his, Steve, you should go to, Jeff, you should invite Steve to the next one. Happens there. It's sheer energy from Jeff dictating and all of these minds coming together, bowing down to Jeff, listening to everything he says, and a mind meld that happens in his CEO Institute meetings.
Oh, I'm excited about that. I would love to go. But Jeff, let me ask you, is it important for the public good for one of these billionaires who's engaged in some form of major excess to have them broken down or contained by government? I mean, I think back in American history about Andrew Carnegie or, John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, others that were extraordinarily important in America's development history, but all of them were, in a way, broken. Their backs were broken by the power of the federal government. Does that have to happen again today?
If there's unethical, illegal behavior and predatory conduct and things, it can make sense. And the examples that we're talking about, that isn't what I think was at risk. I think we certainly saw that there were financial disclosures, regulatory disclosures, and public health disclosures at places like FTX and Theranos where the public didn't get the truth. That took better enforcement, didn't take new laws, but took better enforcement of the laws we have and, frankly, a broken corporate governance system. So that's what was missing. You know, it's that kind of self-awareness, and I thank Vivek for his kind compliments about lessons that we pull out of our CEOs at our events. I started this program. We still had companies like Wang Labs, Ann Wang, and Ken Olson, a digital equipment company. These were, you know, some of the biggest computer companies on the planet. They don't exist anymore. Ed Land, the founder of Polaroid, who had created instant photography. Every one of these people were minimizing any technological leaps that threatened their original brilliant creation. And it didn't take regulators and Congress people to try to fix the problem. A good board should have fixed those problems internally. Is that Ed Land was so frozen on the photochemistry of vision, he couldn't understand what instant photography would mean in a digital age, and he minimized it. Ken Olson used to make mockery of low-end computing. Who needs their own computer at a sad mistake at digital equipment company and things. So you have to find ways where you stir the pot and get and you don't wind up believing in your omniscience, as Vivek was warning us. Michael Dell has warned us regularly at these CEO summits that a corporation, a business, is not a religion. You have to be able to challenge your precepts. And Michael Dell has reinvented the company 8 times over. And his big frustration with a failed successor is that they had started to deify what he had done. And he said, don't do that. And that's why sometimes it's helpful to bring back a founder that they can stir up the pot. They have what sociologists call idiosyncrasy credits. They're allowed to challenge the core culture because they'll do things that successors were afraid to do. This is almost the failing of Disney way back after Walt Disney passed on the reins to his son-in-law. They froze up and they did nothing creative until Michael Eisner came along.
Well, it kind of reminds me, you know, just to bring back Disney for a minute, where, you know, Bob Iger, the former CEO, is now Back to the Future, is now the incoming CEO. Steve Jobs was the same one. He was ousted out of Apple and then brought back at Apple. And so I'm just, you know, so the kind of chemistry, the DNA of that kind of leadership. But in our last few minutes, Vivek, I'd really like to get a snapshot of how you look at Silicon Valley today. And what are the guide marks as we talk to a lay public that's out there trying to understand whether or not the benefits coming down the road tomorrow are as great and as life-changing? Because right now we're getting a picture of a lot of fraud. We're getting a lot of picture of a lot of, you know, mistakes that have been made and you know, excessive CEO leadership in certain ways. What do you think are the areas of Silicon Valley that we should be have confidence in, and what areas give you concern?
Steve, the good thing about Silicon Valley and the bad thing about it is that it keeps burning down and having to reinvent itself. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that Silicon Valley was actually in semiconductors. That's how it started. And then the semiconductor industry imploded. And then there was software. And then there was web. And then there's crypto. And, you know, this is where the FTX came from. And now Silicon Valley is into healthcare. The magic happens when you have innovators coming together and challenging each other. And that's Silicon Valley. What happens then is that the old technologies, they get on the exponential paths, they peak, and then they implode. And along comes another set of technologies, another forest. As the old forest burns down, a new forest comes up. Mm. That's a constant reinvention that happens in Silicon Valley. And that's what Jeff described happens at big companies also, that you have to be able to burn them down and reinvent them. And the problem is that when you start worshiping, you know, the founders, and when you start getting the God complex, you think that what worked before would work again. No, it doesn't work again. You have to keep reinventing and rethinking. You have to burn down like Silicon Valley did and reinvent. That's the way it goes.
Do you think Twitter will be around in a year?
I think what we're going to see with Twitter, and of course, I would defer to the technological wizardry Vivek, is that there are at least two very strong competitors, and I don't mean Donald Trump's Truth Social. There are two very legitimate ones that's focused on journalist community, and one of them, which is a much broader platform that's in a beta format right now, that'll be some long past due competitors to Twitter. And maybe that'll make Twitter better, but it's not going to make them stronger right now. They right now have been surviving, losing money in a monopoly environment as such a heavily relied on service. It's hard to understand how they haven't done better. But now with advertisers fleeing with the recklessness that Musk has brought in with lack of content moderation, as they start to become a platform for bigotry, racism, and social unrest, no advertisers can stay with them. So Twitter is imploding fast before our eyes. But I do think that there'll be some quick message social media counterparts that come along that fill that space. A really a big lesson here is not to blame the imperial nature of the emperor for life mindset of the CEO founder. Let them try to push for as much as they can. But the rest of us need to push back. We've talked about the failures of the boards, but something where Vivek and I often come together is the complete failure of industry analysts repeatedly that fall in love, with the CEOs or the media that becomes enraptured with them. Again, as part of that fear of missing out cult-like feature, they're afraid to raise criticisms. They're afraid that somehow they're going to look like the skunk in the lawn party, and they don't question things that should have been questioned at Theranos, should have been questioned at FTX. And that's where we really see the value has to be added. Don't blame the founders. Blame the media, blame the analysts, and blame the boards.
Well, I think
Steve, on Twitter, the value is in the community. The fact that there are hundreds of millions of people and people like us coming together on Twitter, very likely that Elon will mess it up and then do a fire sale to a Microsoft or a Google or some other company which can control it again. My favorite is Microsoft. This is why I've advocated that Microsoft simply purchase it. They could probably buy it for a fraction of what Elon purchased it for and fix it. That's more the more likely scenario because we're all there already.
That's a great suggestion. I love that suggestion. That's the most important thing out of the show, I think, right there.
Satya Nadella will fix it. He's calm. I mean, he's the sort of example of the leader that Jeff advocates, who is calm, collected, who listens, reasonable. I mean, he's at the right place at the right time. He's the sort of executive that Twitter needs to fix it.
Well, we'll have to.
He's our legend and leadership winner in 2 weeks. You guys need to both come and give him that idea at our CEO forum. Then.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. History in the making. Right now, we'll send them the link for the show. I want to thank you both. What a great conversation. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies at Yale University, and Vivek Wadhwa, author and tech entrepreneur. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor.
So, what's the bottom line? Here's the paradox. The biggest disruptions, innovations, and strategic leaps in our lives often depend on the brilliant thinking of folks who come off as jerks. They just see the rules of life and the order of society, and they say, nope, not for me. They imagine something totally different. So whatever we think about leaders like Elon Musk, we have to admit that they're changing society. Now he has his own media company, just like many other billionaires. Jeffrey Bezos owns the Washington Post. Rupert Murdoch owns Fox. But it's not just about whether Twitter survives or what kind of platform it'll be when the dust settles. There's something bigger at play. With extreme wealth comes extreme power. So how do you protect society from the whims of billionaires? That's where governments can actually play a role, finding the line between innovation and the protection of the public interest to make sure that the richest few are more of a constructive force and less of a destructive one. And that's the bottom line.